All right, we're beginning here on the top of Chaf Gimel and Aleph by the Gemara. The Gemara begins, Mai Taima, Mishum Nikla. So over here, the Bach takes out these three words and says that there's no placement of these words in terms of their meaning vis-a-vis the Gemara that's upcoming as well as the Mishnah. On the other hand, our Gemara does have the Girsa, and many of the Rishonim note such a Girsa. What they're referencing to is the Pasuk in the Torah that describes the Makot. And there it says, Arbeim Yakenu, Lo Yosif, Pen Yosif Lakoto al Ele Makaraba, Vinikla Achicha Leinecha. So that's what the Gemara is referencing to, is Mishum Nikla, because of Nikla. Now the Mai Taima is why. And they're answering a why as to what is happening in the Mishnah. The Mishnah has a number of dinim that seem to relate to this Nikla, or the idea of humiliating the individual. And that is, in the Mishnah, first of all, when we grab the individual, we don't worry about what happens to their clothing. We rip it, we tear it, we do whatever we do without consideration for that humiliation. We also spoke about the fact that if the person loses control over their functions and they are humiliated by that, then they're discharged. They don't have to get the makot. So where does this idea come from that humiliation is part and parcel of the makot? And might even be the primary purpose of the makot, and that is what the Gemara is answering over here, Mai Taima, Mishum Nikla. And that is what the meaning of this phrase would be, in explaining why humiliation is a part of the din of makot. And you would say that the read the pasuk is Pen Yosif Lakoto al Eile Makaraba, but Nikla Achicha Leinecha is not a reason as to why Pen Yosif, that you shouldn't add on makot, but rather you shouldn't hit him more then he deserves, because that's what his punishment is to be humiliated, but not to have excess hittings or be hit more than he should be hit. But there you see that this idea of humiliation is integral to the makot. And again, that is part and parcel of the makot, was the public humiliation, which was a deterrence for people engaging in this type of behavior. Am Rav Sheisha Mishum Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah, Minayin the Rutsuah Sheishel Egel. How do we know that the whip should be made out of leather that comes from a calf? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says, again, we're reading the same pasuk over here, Arbeim Yakenu, B'samech Lei, Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho. So we know that this juxtaposition exists because Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho is the paradigmatic law from which we learn which Slavim get Malkot. So that juxtaposition also teaches you Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho, Shor, is connected to the Arbaim Yakenu, that the leather of a shor is too hard, the leather of the shor. So we use an egel, which is a baby shor, a calf, in order to have that be the leather that you use for the whip. V'amar Rav Sheshet, Mishum Rav Lazar ben Azariah. So over here you have a repeat of the individuals who are saying the memra. So even though we're going off topic, you have the same Amor in the name of Atana making that statement, but it also relates to the juxtaposition in the pasuk, which is the parshia of Malkot. Then you have Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho, and the next thing afterwards is Kiryeshua Achim Yachdav, which is the parshia of Yibum. And so then that brings you the next memra of the Garata Minayin LeYevama Shenafla Lifnei Mukash Chin She'en Chusmin Ota. How do we know that if a woman whose husband passed away when they didn't have children, and now the brother who was coming to marry her as the Yabam is someone who is a Mukash Chin? He has terrible boils, blisters, diseased in some way. How do we know she'en chusmin ota, that we do not seal her fate? So here you can read it a number of ways. The Rivan reads it, we don't silence her. We allow her to protest this evil, and we heed her request not to marry this individual. The Ramban says she'en chusmin ota, is that we don't force her to marry him and then divorce him in order to be mekayim the ibum and then divorce. Or I think you could just read it simply as She'en Chosmin Ota. How do we know that in a sense we don't lock her up, incarcerate her in this marriage by having her marry this individual she has no interest in being married to? So how do we know that you don't seal her fate to be with this individual? Dichtiv, Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho, V'Samech Lei, and immediately afterwards it says Kishvu Achim Yachdav. So here you have a continuum where Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho sits between Makot and Yibum, and we see that it affects both of these parshiot that it is juxtaposed to, which is the nature of Parshat Ki Tetzeh, which is chock full of mitzvot that seemingly aren't connected, And Chazal see a smichut parshio from these disparate mitzvot that are placed together. Here you have it simply because of the individuals who are making the statement here. Anybody who denigrates the mo'adim is as if he worships avodah zarah. Dichtiv, because the pasuk says in Parshat Kitisa, Elohei masecha lo taselach, you may not make foreign gods. V'samichlei, and then juxtaposed to that is, et chag ha-matzot tishmor, that you should keep the holidays, the shloshet regalim, that are mentioned there in Parshat Kitisa. Now, over here, the Rivan explains that mo'adim is not what you would have thought, the holidays, but mo'adim are chol ha-mo'ed, the intermediary days that are associated with the holidays. He proves it from the Gemara in Chagiga, who darshins the psukim there in Kitisa, et chag ha-matzot tishmor, as a reference to Chol HaMoed, because the Gemara says, we already know about Yom Rishon and Yom HaShvi'i, which are the holidays, so what is this coming to tell you about? Must be coming to tell you about Chol HaMoed. That would be akin to what we see from Rav Elazar in the Mishnah Navot, who also says, HaMibazeh et HaMoedot. So it would be a similar genre. And over there too, you see the Rishonim explaining it, referencing to Chol HaMoed. And the reason being is that Chol HaMoed is not explicit in the Torah, or at least the Iser Melacha with Chol HaMoed is not explicit in the Torah, and that leads to the major machloket as to whether the Iser Melacha and Chol HaMoed is only a din derabonon, or is it a din deoraita. But what we're saying here is that a person who's mevazeh et ha-mo'adot is as if he's worshipping a vazirah, because it's a denial of basically Torah Shebaal Peh. The Torah Shebichtav may not mention the Yisra Malacha of Chol HaMoed, but that is something that's clearly found in the Torah Shebaal Peh. So a person who's mevazeh, denigrates Chol HaMoed, is in denial of Torah Shebaal Peh, and that's Ke'ilu Oveid Avodah Zarah. Those that take it literally as referring to the Mo'adim then say one of two things. Either the word Mo'ed means a meeting place, a meeting time. That means that this is a rendezvous between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And one who is mevazeh that is Ke'ilu Oveid Avodah Zarah, because he is denying that relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Or you can say that the whole point of the regel is to give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is in connection with the agrarian calendar. And those holidays also fall out, as the Torah says specifically here in Parshat Kitisa, as well as in Parshat Mishpatim, that they coincide with the agricultural holidays of the time. If a person celebrates the Mo'adim, then he thanks Hashem for the bounty that he has. If a person then is mevazeh the Mo'adim, in essence what he's saying is that it's all mine, it's all my doing, and he is cutting HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of the picture, and for that reason it would be the equivalent of worshipping a Avodah Zarah. So whether you say it's Chol HaMoed or you say it's Mo'adim, you could say the same thing here, that there's a bizui that is equivalent to worshipping a Avodah Zarah. Rav Sheshet Mishum Rav Elazar ben Azariah. And again, we have another member of Rav Sheshet brought from the Tana, Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Kol ha-misaper lashon hara, v'chol ha-mikabel lashon hara, v'chol ha-me'id edut sheker, ra'ui lashlichol l'klavim. So anybody who speaks lashon hara, anybody who accepts lashon hara, and anybody who gives false witness testimony, that person should be thrown to the dogs. Dichtiv, because the pasuk says, Lakelev tashlichun oto. There it says, by the treifa, basar basadeh treifa lo tochelu, Lakelev tashlichun oto. And you throw it out to the kelev, that's the reward to the dogs. By leaving Mitzrayim, it says, lo yecheratz kelev lishono. The dogs didn't bark when Bnei Israel left Mitzrayim. And this is their reward that they're given this food. V'samichle, and juxtaposed there in Parshat Mishpatim, to Lakelev tashlichun oto is, Lo tisa shema shav. Do not accept false reports. That's the pashtuta pasuk. And then it says, kari bei nami, don't just read it as lo tisa shema shav, rather read it as lo tasi, that you should not only not accept reports, but you should not be the one who is providing such reports. So there is a restriction against both providing the reports as well as accepting those false reports. Now, the Gemara over here says, v'chulei, and you can see actually in the Rivan that seemingly this was a part of the text of the Gemara, which is the remainder of the pasuk, which is missing here. Al tashit yadcha im rasha liyod eit chamas. The remainder of the pasuk says, don't bear false witness, or don't join together with those that are inappropriate in giving testimony. And so that is the other piece of the puzzle here, which is that someone who gives Eidut Sheker also is Ra'oy L'Shlichan the Kelev. The idea being that the Klavim, the dogs over here, are rewarded for their listening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. And over here, these individuals who are Mekabel Lashon Hara, Mesaper Lashon Hara, and bear false witness are individuals who don't follow the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're not worried about that, especially in the context of Beit Din, where we say that the Shechina is present, and therefore they should be the Kelev Tashlichun Oto. They should be thrown to the dogs, to the ones that understand what it means to abide by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's word. Or you could just simply say that they are acting like animals. They aren't differentiating themselves as human beings. The difference between a human being and an animal is the ability to speak, communicate, articulate thoughts. And that's what we know the Targum says by Adam when he's created, that he is l'ruach memala, he's a speaking being. So here an individual who takes speech and misuses their speech, then they're no different than the animal. And therefore the speaking and accepting of lashon hara and the giving false testimony all fall under that concept of misusing or abusing this speech that is given that differentiates you as a human being. Therefore, the kelev tashlichun oto, you should be no better than animals. You should be like the meat or the trefa that is thrown to the dogs. Right? Ushtei ritzuot, in the Mishnah, it speaks about two additional pieces of leather that were on the whip. Over here in the Gemara, it says tana shel chamor, that they were made out of donkey hide. The Mishnah we have actually has the word chamor already in it. But based on what we see here in the Gemara, it would imply that the word chamor did not appear in the Mishnah, and the Gemara is bringing up Braita to tell you what those two additional pieces of leather that were there on the whip, that they were made out of donkey hide. Kidedorish haugilila aleder of Chista, and that is based on the drasha of the Galilean that was by Rav Chista from the first perek in Yishayahu that we read as the Haftorah for Shabbat Chazon, Yadashor Koneyu, V'chamor evus ba'alav. The shor, the ox, knows the one who owns him, and the chamor, the donkey, knows the trough from which he eats. Israel, lo yada, Israel doesn't seem to know that. Ami, lo itbonan. And my nation hasn't considered this matter, which is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was basically saying, instincts of animals are that they know who takes care of them. And when they know who takes care of them, they're loyal to those that take care of them. You, who I am taking care of, are not loyal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, despite the fact that you know that I'm the one who takes care of you. So, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yavish Mishi Makir Evus Ba'alav. So, should come along the donkey who knows the hand that feeds him, Bifara Mimi Sheinu Makir Evus Ba'alav, and take retribution on the one who doesn't know who's feeding him or taking care of him, because he's violating the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the abrogation of the Levin in the Torah. Now, what's interesting about this is that they could actually have learned both things from here, which is Yadash Shor Koneu V'chamor Evus Ba'alav. So the word Shor and Chamor appear here in the Pasuk in Yishayahu, which would then indicate there's a reason for to use both the Shor, or the Egel, and the chamor. Yet the Gemara brought before, lo tachsom shor b'disho, as the source for ego. I'll just speculate as to the fact that that is written in the Torah, this is written in the Navi, that's what tells the Gemara which one is the primary of the leather used here and which is the secondary. The larger whip comes from the ego, and the smaller pieces come from the chamor, and I think that might be what the Gemara is trying to teach us by bringing a different source for the ego, even though you could have brought that same source from the pasuk in Yishayahu. Yada tefach, the handle is a tefach, as you mentioned yesterday in the Mishnah. The way that the Rivan says is that there was a piece of wood that was a tefach long that was the handle. Others say that the handle was actually the whip itself, made out of the leather itself. Amar Abayish Mamina, kochad b'chad, lepum gavei abdinan lei. From this you see where they make a whip that is special for each individual. You get a customized whip. So the way Abayi describes it is, from here you see that everybody gets a customized whip. That is both because of, we'll see in a second, the handle, as well as the fact that the Mishnah tells you that when you hit the individual, it has to reach al pikri so. It has to reach their belly. So based on the Rivan's explanation and the way the most Rishonim see it, is that you hit him across the back. That means that the whip has to be long enough that it crosses the entire back and reaches the other side, basically towards the kreso, to his belly on the other side. For the Rambam and others who believe that you whip him vertically, which is on his shoulders, on the back, up and down the back, then when it means api kreso, it has to be a whip that is long enough that it would reach his belly, which is on the other side, and then he whips with it. So that's both cases, it's giving you the size of the whip. That teaches you that the whip is customized to the individual. The way Abayi says it now is, each whip then is customized or custom made for this individual. Says if you do that, you're going to have endless number of whips that are found in the Beit Din. They're going to have an extra small, a large, an extra large, an extra, extra large. They're going to have all these size whips in there. It just seems ludicrous to have so many whips there. It has a, here, the way that the Rivan brings it down, he says, avik, which is means to like clasp or be held in place. So that means that either these are loops or clasps that are on the handle. Kiboy, when he wants to miktar, he knots it, or he tightens it. Kiboy mirafaba. Or if he wants to, he can loosen it. So there are either these fasteners or clasps on there that allow you to extend or retract the whip. And so therefore it's basically an adjustable whip. So that's how we customize the whip. We don't have separate customized whips for each individual. We simply adjust the length of the whip based on the necessity at that time. Malkin oto v'chule. Menahane mile. How do we know that this is the case? Amar of Kana, the Amar Kura, the Pasuk says, v'ipilo ha-shofet, v'hikau lefanav kedei rishato. So here you have the limud for why it is that we break up the lashes into one-third on the front of the body and two-thirds on the back of the individual. So the limud supposedly is v'ipilo ha-shofet v'ikau. The shofet causes him to bend over, and then v'ikau lefanav, and then he hits him. Now the lefanav over here seemingly modifies the executioner and not the individual receiving the makot. What the Gemara here says is no, ikau lefanav is a reference not to the executioner but to the individual being whipped, and therefore it's v'ikau lefanav kedei rishato, that he gets an amount of rish'ah that is lefanav in front of him. Then the puzzle continues, bimispar. Bimispar is a minimum of two. And so now what you have is rishah chat milafanav. He gets one rishah, quote unquote, but a one portion in front. Shtei rishayot miachorav, and two portions on his back. So most rishonim learn simply that that means you get one third in the front, two thirds in the back. The Rambam, on the other hand, says you get one third in the front, then you get one third on one shoulder, and one third on the other shoulder. So yes, you get two thirds in the back, but it's still broken down into thirds, or sections of thirds. So that's one way to read it, which is, the Kedei Rishato is a single unit, and then Mispar is a two units. So if I put it together, you have three units, and that says Lefanav, getting hit in front, is that minimum of one unit, or one third of the Makot. The Rabbeinu Bechai over here says that the word Makah, or the Shorish Makah, appears three times in the Pasuk, and therefore he says that it's divided up into thirds based on the word Makah. And then once you know you're divided into thirds, it says Kedei Rishato Milafanav. That one portion of that goes in front, and so that's how you get to the one third in front. Otherwise it's not clear how the Gemara knows, even though it knows one portion in front, it's not clear how it knows the other two. So you have to either say Mispar means a minimum of two, or there's some other way by which the Gemara knew that that was broken up into thirds, and then it knew that Kedei Rishato, only one third of that goes to the front of the individual. And that's how we get to this breakdown of one third in front, two thirds in the back. Emokinoto, Amrav Chistam Rabbi Yochanan, minayin the ritzua shehi muchpelet. How do we know that the ritzua has to be folded over? That was one of the things the Mishnah discussed yesterday, that you fold it once, you fold it twice. We saw the machlokot in the Rishonim as to whether that means there are two separate pieces of leather, each one folded over. So you have two pieces that make now when you're folded over into four. Or is it one single piece of leather that is folded over twice? It gives you, the same effect, but it's only one piece of leather. And then we even saw the Ritva who suggested that after they folded it, they cut it at the looped ends so that you actually get four whips at the end. Gemara wants to know, how do you know that you're supposed to do this? Shenamar, because the pasuk says, Vihi Pilo. The Gemara asks, Vami Baile the Gufei, don't we need that for, you could read it one or two ways, itself, the gufei, or the gufei means for his body. Because we learned in the Mishnah, how do you know that he's not upright or sitting, but rather bent over, is from vihi pilo, that they will push him over into a bent position. Imkein lechtov kra yatehu. So then you could just write yatehu, which is a better word to describe a person that is bent over. My hipilo, why did you use the terminology hipilo? Shmamina tarte, that you can learn both things from this. It's still unclear from this as to how you learn from the hipilo that you double over the leather of the whip. So either you have to say the hipilo means that the whip should be something that comes down with koach and has power to it, and therefore the hipilo means that it will knock him over in a sense. So you have to use something that is not just a single piece of leather, but something that has more heft to it. So when you fold over the leather pieces, you're going to get a thicker or bigger whip. That's one way. Or the Marsha over here brings that vihipilo is as if it should read here in the Gemara, Al tikri vihipilo, ela vihichpilo. Don't read the word vihipilo, but rather hichpilo. So there's some play on the word hipilo to mean not only lahapil, but the hachpil, in order to double up rather than simply to push over. Or that is the meaning of vihipilo. When you knock somebody over, you push them over, they are doubled over. And so that meaning the words have a similar etymology in the fact that vihipilo and hichpilo is to double over, and that can be to push somebody over to be doubled, or it could be that you double something in its thickness. All right, amakeh makeh biyado. The person who whips, the executioner, uses one hand to bring the whip. Tan Rabbanan, ema midin chazanim elei chasirei koach v'yatirei mado. The people that you appoint to be the executioners, we generally pick somebody who is a wimp. We take the guys out of the Beit Midrash, who know the law and know the halacha, but they're scrawny and they can't hit hard. So you would do that for two reasons. One is that that would limit the amount of damage that you have from the whipping that's taking place here, because there is risk that the individual from this corporal punishment could die or pass away because of the power of the whipping that's happening. Number two is we want the Yeteri Mada so they know not to exceed the number of whippings or how to go about doing the execution. Afilo Chasirei Mada v'Yeteri Koach. It can even be individuals who are brawn over brain, which is that they're big, strong individuals who really don't know the halacha. As the Bali Tosfo point out, it's clear that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't insist that you get people with brawn and not brain. He's just saying that we're not makpid on it. It could be brain over brawn or brawn over brain. We're just not makpid about who the executioner is. In either way, it's fine. I just think he's saying that Tosfo says it's just not makpid on it. Amarova kavate the Rabbi Yehuda mistavro. Makes sense what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, Dichtiv lo Yosef, pen Yosef. As the Pasuk says that he should not add on, because if he adds on to him, which is the problem if you do too many lashes. Iyamar bishlama chasirei mada, if it's individuals who really don't know the law, and they're just here because of their brawn, then hainu ditzarech lazhurei. That's why you have to warn them, don't whip too much. Don't do an excess of what you're asked to do. Ella iamar titere mada. If these individuals are out of the Beit Midrash and they know the halacha, mitzarech lazhurei, why do you have to give them any warning? They know the halacha that you're not allowed to exceed the number of lashes. So rabbanon emizarzin ella mizareis. You only warn somebody who, in general, accepts the instructions of the Beit Din. Somebody who is wise to the matter, then you warn them about that because they can understand and will acknowledge that which you are saying. Tana, kishu magbia magbia b'shtei yadav. When he lifts up the whip, he uses both hands to raise the whip. Kishu makeh makeh b'yado achat. When he brings the whip down, he brings it down with one hand. Kiheche, the what we have in front of us, the gear says the leite mididei. You can see here on the side here, nusach acher, the tete marzayo, which is the gear set that most of the Rishonim have, and that is that it should come down with strength and power, which we all know that when you want to throw a ball, if you throw your ball with one hand, it has much more direction and power. If you try to throw a ball with two hands, that doesn't happen. And similarly over here, if you want to bring down a whip with power and in a directed manner, using one hand to whip, it's going to be much more effective than bringing it down with two hands. And for that reason, you raise it with two hands, but you bring it down with one hand. And we saw in the Mishnah that while they're doing the whipping, they read the psukim. Tana Rabbanan, Hagadol Shebidayanim Kore, the leader of the Beit Din, the head of the Beit Din, is the one who reads the psukim. Vasheni Moneh, the second judge that is there, counts or enumerates which lash we're up to. Vashlishi Omer Hakeyu. And the third one gives a directive to hit. That means that the executioner can't hit until the judge says, hit. And that way, first of all, we know exactly how many are being given. That also gives them a window of time to decide whether they should continue to whip him, and he can sustain these whips. So it gives a little bit of a breather so that they can make decisions about the capacity of this individual to sustain these lashes. As much as makam ruba, in a case where there is a large number of lashes being given, ma'arich, then you extend the psukim that you are reading. Bizman shemaka mu'etet, in a case where there are less lashes, mikatzer, then you do less, or you say less. Vahanantan, doesn't our Mishnah say, chozer l'tchilata mikra? You just go back to the beginning. So it doesn't sound like there that you paste the psukim in order to make it fit exactly to the number of lashes. Doesn't say, well, if you have more lashes, take your time reading the pasuk. If you have less lashes, speed it up. It simply says that if you finish, go back to the beginning again. Which means that you just keep cycling through the psukim until they finish giving the lashes. Very similar to what we find in the Mishnah and Pesachim with regards to the Hallel when they brought the Karbanot Pesach. That there that they used to say Hallel the Levim while they were bringing the Korbanot Pesach. And as the Korbanot Pesach were brought, they finished Hallel. The Mishnah says if they finished once, then they began again and did it a second time. And then they would do it a third time if need be. So the idea is that you just keep doing it until you're successfully complete what needs to be done then. And you would have thought the same thing over here. So the my answer is mitzvah letzamtzem. The mitzvah is to get it right, which is to read the psukim to fit the space that the lashes will take. And therefore you should pace it so that if it's a large number of lashes or a small number, that you will finish the psukim exactly along the lines of the lashes. If you lo tzimtzem, bidiavad. If you're unsuccessful at pacing it, chozer l'tchilat ha-mikra, then you go back to the beginning of the psukim. Now, this also might connect to what we said in the Mishnah yesterday about the Tosafot Reed. Tosafot Reed says, aside from the first pasuk, the other three psukim that are brought down have 13 words in them. So if you actually pace it and you have three psukim with 13 words, you actually have 39 words there, and that would match up with the number of lashes a person would get if they were getting the full number of lashes, and that might be part of what is being noted over here, is that they're reading the pasuk, and then the person is counting, and they do hakeyu, the count might relate to the words in the psukim as well, which is that there are 39 words here. Obviously, if the person is getting less than 39, then you're going to have to be mitzamtzem, because of the fact that you have now 39 words that are fitting in with less lashes, and then you'd have to speed it up in order to match up. Tana Rabbanan, Makar Rabba, the pasuk says, Arbaim yekenu lo yosif, pen yosif lakoto alelem, Makar Rabba, nikla achicha le'enecha. Ein li ela Makar Rabba. I only know about a Makar Rabba. Makar Muetet minayin. How do I know that a Makar Muetet is also affected? Tana Lomar lo yosif. So the girsa that we have in our Gemara is lo yosif, that you can't add on, which means lo yosif mikol makom. No matter what, you can't add on. The girsa that the Gra promotes, and you can see that the oath appears here as well as in the Rivan and everywhere else, which is tamad omar al eile, on these, which is the words right before that. It says, pen yosif lakoto al eile makaraba. So al eile is the reference and then not the makaraba. Inke matamad omar makaraba. If it comes to teach you that it doesn't matter about the Makar Rabba, then what is it coming to teach you? Limeid, alarishonot, shein Makar Rabba. It comes to teach you that the first ones are classified as a Makar Rabba. So over here, the Rivan actually brings a sifrei that deals with this, and there are actually two different limudim over here. It sounds like here in the pasuk that there are two issues. One is, arbein yakenu lo yosif. You give him 40 and no more. Pen yosif lakoto alele Makar Rabba. Maybe you're going to give him more than that, Makar Rabba, which would be excessive. From there, it sounds like that only if you give him the full 40, is there a problem of pen yosif, of adding on. But if you don't give him the full 40, if you don't give him the Makar Rabba, then there's no problem with adding on an additional lash. That's one issue. The second issue is that it says here, you give him 40 lashes, And then, sounds from this that you may not add on top of that more lashes, but more lashes are a makaraba, not just one lash. Sounds like you have to give them a whole bunch more to be in violation of this restriction. And that's what the Gemara is bringing, the limud. It's actually the limud in both of those instances, which is, how do I know that not only when you give him the full 40 or 39, and you give him a lesser amount, how do I know there's a restriction against adding on? That's number one. And number two is, how do I know that when you add on, it's not just when you add on multiple lashes, but even if you add on one lash? In both cases, depending on which kirsa you have, the answer is either penyosif, which means that no matter what you add, no matter how many you add, and to what you add it, it's a problem. Or it's al-eila, which is that don't be mosif al-eila. Al-eila means on these, whatever you give. Or al-eila, you may not add on top of these any amount. And therefore, the restriction is against both of those. And you can see that in the Rivan, where he says, the ratio of the bright ayachita bisiprei. In the ala bizman shemosifim al minyan arbaim. That's only when you add on to the 40. Al kol omeid v'omeid sh'amdua beitin minayin. How do I know if you gave him a lesser assessment? How do I know that's true? Tama lomar lo yosif, according to the gra al eile. Mikol makom. That means no matter what. Makaraba. In the ala makaraba. I would think that only when you add on an excess amount that is makaraba is it a problem. In the chayev al lo tosif ala bizman shikol makot harbei al omeid. Makot mu'atot, v'afilu shtei makot o achat. I don't know if you even just go one over, it's a problem. Inayim, tasu losif, tamadom, or yosif, or al-eile. Lo yosif lakot al-eile, al-minyan ha-omeid. So here you have both limudim that come out of this pasuk. The derivation is from the same lo yosif or al-eile, although it seems from the Rivan that the Gemara is speaking about the second of the pieces of the Braita, not the first, but he brings you both halves of the Braita. They're both asking basically the same question about Makah Rabbah. So then the last line here of the Gemara, which is, what does that mean? Matamalomer Makah Rabbah. They made a Rishonot Shein Makah Rabbah. That teaches you that the original ones were a Makah Rabbah. You can read that one of two ways. One is to say that even if he's getting less than the requisite amount, that is classified as a Makah Rabbah for this individual. Or, what if the Makah Rabbah is coming to teach you that the first lashes that are given by Makah Rabbah, should be given with full force, b'chol kocho, with all of his strength, which is what the Mishnah demanded, that when the executioner whips, he whips b'chol kocho, and that might be what it means, the Rishonot. The ones that you do give, you give with full force, even though you're not allowed to add on top of that. So it's telling you qualitatively about the lashes, not quantitatively. Don't give him Makah Rabbah doesn't mean quantitatively don't give him a lot of lashes. It's saying Makah Rabbah, you should give him full force when you're doing those lashes, but don't exceed that number quantitatively. Nitkalkel. So this deals with the latter part of the Mishnah where people lose control over their functions and therefore they either defecate or urinate on themselves. Tarabanan. Echad ha'ish v'echad ha'isha b'rei v'lo b'mayim. So Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir believes that the only thing that discharges your obligation here because of nikla is if they defecate. That doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman. If they lose control of their functions and defecate, that would dismiss them. But urinating would not do that. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Aish Berei Vaisha B'mayim, that's Rabbi Yehuda who we found in our Mishnah, that there's different thresholds for the man and the woman. For the man, it's defecating. For the woman, it's urinating. They're obviously the Tanakama in the Mishnah, which is it's irrespective of whether it's a man or a woman, either urinating or defecating would discharge your obligation to be embarrassed, and the person would be dismissed. Don't have a bright Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Echad Ha'ish V'Echad Ha'isha B'Rei. So over here we have Rabbi Yehuda saying something similar to Rabbi Meir. So how do we reconcile that with the Rabbi Yehuda we just brought and the Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah? Amar Rav Nachman Ba'Yitzchak Shnehem Shavim B'Rei. All it's saying is that a man and woman both are dismissed when it comes to defecation. That doesn't mean that by the man there might also be another threshold that will release him, which is urinating. Or in essence, that's where he argues with the Chachamim with regards to urinating of the man. But with Rei, he agrees that everybody is dismissed with Rei. Amar Shmuel, Kaftu Viratz Mi Beitin Patur. If they tied him up to the pole or to the whipping post, and then he takes flight from Beitin, he is patur. There are two possibilities as to why that is true. Rashi, not here, Rashi in Shavuot says the reason is that he's embarrassed. The running away from Beit Din is a sufficient amount of humiliation, that he's already been tied up to the whipping post. And the fact that he had to run out of Beit Din scared for his life, then already is enough humiliation that he is dismissed because he got v'nikla achicha le'enecha. On the other hand, the Ramban, similar to what he said yesterday with regards to the change in the assessment of what a person can take in terms of lashes, the Ramban says that a person who runs away from corporal punishment is no different than a person who escapes from capital punishment, which is that if you leave the Beit Din zakai when it comes to capital punishment, we don't bring you back. If for some reason you got out of Beit Din, or they allowed you to go as an innocent, even if later on we get other evidence, or things change, we can't bring you back and prosecute you for that same thing. Min ha-shamayim rachmu, or min ha-shamayim chasu alei, they had rachamim on him and they let him go. And he is a similar refrain over here, which is that when he rats me Beit Din patur, when the person leaves Beit Din, basically chasu alei min ha-shamayim. The fact that he was able to escape and run away before he got the lashes, it's the equivalent of him being declared innocent or discharging his obligation, and therefore we don't bring him back to Beit Din. And again, that's similar to what the Ramban said yesterday with regards to when a person was assessed up front for 40, and later on they diminished the number. Over there, the Ramban suggested that you don't bring him back because you can't, once a person is declared zakai, you can't bring him back and re-prosecute him. He said that both by diminishment of numbers as well as increase in numbers. Meitave, kala, ben birishona, ben bishnia, putrin oto. When it comes to a person soiling themselves because they lost control of their functions, that's whether on the first time or the second time, putrin oto, we dismiss them. Nifsika ritsua, if the whip breaks, bishnia, putrin oto, if it's on the second time, they release him, birishona, ain putrin oto. In the first case, we do not release him. What Rishona and Shniya mean is unclear. The Rivan and the Balei Tosafot take a similar approach, which is Rishona means when he lifts up the whip to hit the first time. Shniya means when he lifts up the whip to whip the second time. So what it really means is it's the difference between being before the first lash or after the first lash. That's how they read it. And that means that if the person soils himself, whether it was before the first lash or after the first lash, that's enough to be classified as nikla achicha le'enecha, and we dismiss the case, or we allow the person to go free. On the other hand, when it comes to the breaking of the whip, only if they've hit him once, do we say now that the whip broke, that that's a reason to dismiss him. If it happens before the whipping began, that's not enough. Because we need at least some sort of nikla, some sort of humiliation. If he got one lash, he already suffered some humiliation, and therefore when it breaks, we just say, you're gone, you're okay. If it breaks beforehand, then he never suffered any humiliation. As opposed to when he soils himself, he's getting humiliated in the context of the whipping, and therefore he is released. That's one way to read it. The other way, or the simple way to read it, which is brought to the name of the Yad Ramah, is that Rishonan Shniya literally means the first lash and the second lash. The third way to read it is the Rambam, which says Rishonan Shniya references to a person getting multiple malkot. And Rishona and Shniya means the first set, and Shniya means the second set of Malkot. So Amai, the Gemara says, why do you have to wait for him to get at least one lash before he's released? Lahavi Karatz, he should be no different than a person who ran away from Beit Din. Gemara answers, Hatam Ratz, Hachalo Ratz. There he ran, here he didn't run. According to Rashi, that would simply mean that the running is the humiliation. There he suffered humiliation, here he didn't suffer any humiliation yet. According to the Ramban, the fact that he's still standing here means that he wasn't dismissed or wasn't let go as an innocent, and we're not bringing him back. He's still here, and therefore we continue to give him the lashes. Tanur Banan, Amduhu, Likishi Yilke, and then here the Bach says, Yikle, that when they whip him, he will be Kala, which is the word, their term used in our Mishnah to mean that he soils himself. So they assess up front that if they give him any lashes, he's going to lose control of his functions and he's going to soil himself. Potrinoto, release him right away. Likishi yetze mi Beit Din kala. If we assess that after he's finished being lashed, then when he's walking out of Beit Din, he's going to lose control and he's going to soil himself. Malkinoto, then we give him the lashes. So only if he soils himself in the context of the whipping, do we say there's a problem? This is what the Rivan says. It's an interesting drasha. He says v'nikla is lashon zilzul, and he says that ein notim lo makah shikle aleha miyad. You cannot give him a hit that will immediately cause him to soil himself, because the pasuk says first that you give him the lashes, and then v'nikla chikle enecha, and then he will be embarrassed. So the embarrassment is a result of the lashes, but not at the moment of the lashes. So therefore, if you're going to whip him and he's going to lose control immediately, that is not a result of the lashes, meaning that it's not post the lashes. That is, at the time of the lashes itself, he's going to be soiled. So that's why we release him. If it's going to happen after the lashes, that's fine. That's v'nikla achicha, which is after the lashes are already given. V'lo'od el afilu kala b'tchila malkinoto. If he soils himself, loses control before they gave him any of the lashes, then we give him the lashes afterwards. Shenemar, because the pasuk says v'ikalu v'nikla, that first of all he has to get hit, and then only afterwards v'nikla, that is the humiliation come. V'lo shalaka kvar bebeitin, or the other nusach shenikla kvar bebeitin, he's already humiliated or soiled in beitin. So if it happens before you begin the process of lashes, then that's not in the context of v'ikalu. And says it's not in that context, it doesn't get him the requisite humiliation that releases him from the punishment. So it has to be because of the lashes, and it has to be something that is post the lash or lashes. It can't be something whereby the lashes themselves are going to generate the nikla, and it can't be where the nikla happens prior to the lashes. All right, next Mishnah. Kol chayvei kretot shilaku. Anybody who is chayav karet and gets malkot, nifteru yidei kritatan. That discharges their obligation vis-a-vis the karet, and they no longer have a chiyuv karet. Shenemar, pasuk says, v'nikla achicha le'enecha, famous drasha, k'shenlaka, once he's already been hit, or humiliated, arihu ke'achicha, he returns to be your brother, divrei Rabbi Chananya ben Gamliel. That is the position of Rabbi Chananya ben Gamliel. We'll see in the Gemara that there are others that disagree with Rabbi Chananya ben Gamliel. There's also here a machloket in the Rishonim as to whether he has to do tshuva in order for this to work. Do we say that when he gets malkot and does tshuva, that's what precipitates the removal of the karet? Or do we simply say that it is a pol yotze? If you get malkot, then you're not going to get karet because you already got your punishment, irrespective of whether you do the tshuva or not. V'amar Rabbi Chananya ben Gamliel, ma'im o'iveir avira achat, notel nafsho alea. If for a person violating a lotase, he will end up losing his life, and that could either mean, in the context of our Mishnah, malkot, corporal punishment, are considered like dinin nefashot, and there's a chance the person can die in this corporal punishment, or because of the association with karet. The fact that those that are getting karetot also get malkot, so a person for a violation of a lotase in the Torah can lose his life. Hosem mitzvah achat, achat kama v'kama. Then someone who does one mitzvah, certainly so, shetinatein lo nafsho, that he will gain his life, or will he have the ability to sustain himself. And the Rivan over here quotes something that we saw in Masechet Sanhedrin, as well as earlier in this Masechta, that the midah of tova is far in excess of the midah of puranut, and he brings you the psukim, which is by bina prunot, it says, by the aserta dibrot, pokein avon avot al banim, ashilishim ve'al ribeim, which means that by sins, the retribution comes for four generations. On the other hand, when it comes to the giving of good, it says, oseh chesed la'alafim, that Hashem does chesed for the alafim, the minimum of alafim is 2,000. And so if you take 2,000 divided by 4, it's 500 times that tov is better than ra. If you think alafim, as the Rivan says, means endlessly or forever, then it's even in way in excess of that. And his point being that if something is true by an aveira, then al-chad kama v'kama, certainly it's going to be true by a mitzvah. So if an aveira costs one their life, then certainly a mitzvah is going to gain someone life or a much more in excess of that. And you can read also the word nefesh here as not just literally, but also figuratively with regards to karet. If a person is going to lose their life over karet, a mitzvah can gain them back their life and not have them be cut off, or get them back their nefesh and not be cut off. Shimon Omer mimkomohu lameit. We can learn that from its location itself. Shenemar v'nichrutu anefashot ha'osot. It says by the arayot that the individuals who violate the arayot v'nichrutu, they will get karet And if I show to ha osot, those that engage in this activity, the omer, and it says, asher yaseh utam ha'adam v'chai behem. In the next pasuk, it says there in the beginning of Parshat Arayot, it tells you in the header, these are what you need to do, the mishpatim and chukim that you must keep. And then right after it says, v'shmartem et chukotai v'mishpatai, pasuk says, the reason that you should do that is because, asher yaseh utam v'chai behem. If people keep them, then you will live by them. Ha, kol yoshev v'lo avar aveira, nodim lo schar kosei mitzvah. What it tells you is that when a person is passive and doesn't violate any lotasei, he's considered as if he is actively doing a mitzvah or actively engaged in listening to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that is because the pasuk says, "Nechrutu anefashot ha osot." Those that do wrong will be cut off. But then it says that those that follow, "Asher yaseh otam adam v'chai behem." That if you don't do that, then when you do this, yaseh, you will live. That doing is an active verb, but you're not doing anything. You're just desisting from doing the wrong thing. So what he says is that you see from here that not only when you do an active mitzvah do you get credit, but even when you desist, eshev v'altaseh, then you avoid the doing of a lotaseh. In that case as well, you will be credited with doing a mitzvah. And that's how powerful a mitzvah is, that even in the passive form, you are credited with schar ke'oseh mitzvah. So what you see here is a progression in the Mishnah, which says that before we introduce the possibility that an oseh mitzvah is much greater than an oseh aveira, now we have someone who is oseh mitzvah passively, is also credited with as if he did a mitzvah, which would be greater than the one who does an aveira. And then Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi Omer, Arihu Omer, Rak Chazak, Levilti Achol Adam. Make sure to strengthen yourself that you don't eat the blood. Ki Adam hu anafesh, because blood is the life force of the animal. Umayim Adam shenafsho shel Adam katza mimenu. Blood, nobody wants to drink blood or eat blood. People are naturally have a aversion or a repulsion to blood. Haparosh mimenu mikabel schar. Someone who doesn't drink the blood is mikayim, the lotasei, keeps this negative precept. Gezel be'arayot, when it comes to theft and illicit relations, shenafsho shel adam mitaveh lahen umachmadatan, that a person desires them and chases after them, haporesh mehem alchad kama kama. Someone who separates himself from that, certainly so. Sheyizke lo ledorotav ledorot dorotav atzof kol ledorot. That will give him endless reward because of desisting from engaging in these activities. So again, here you have another progression, which is we had active mitzvah, then we have mikayim through passivity a mitzvah, and now we have Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi adding on that there are even lotaseis which you have no desire for that you're going to get credited for. So yes, of course, if you desist from the ones that are desirous, you'll get credit, but even the ones that don't speak to you or don't have any pull to you, you'll get credit for it. So that's all these mitzvot or opportunities to get credit. And that seemingly leads to the last statement in the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Hanani ben Akashi Omer, Ratzo HaKadosh Baruch Hu lezakot et Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give Bnei Yisrael the opportunity for zechuyot. Lefikach hirbalem Torah u'mitzvot. Therefore, he gave them an excessive amount of Torah and mitzvot and commandments. Shenamar Hashem chafetz leman tzidko. Hashem desires for the tzedakah or the righteousness or the good of Klal Yisrael. Yagdil Torah v'yadir. Therefore, he expanded Torah and its glory. So the idea being, the fact that there's numerous mitzvot gives you lots of opportunity. Or basically, you have multiple lavim that are associated, for example, not drinking blood, or not eating shkatzim v'ramasim. These are items that people have no desire for, but Hashem gave us plenty of these mitzvot so that you automatically get lots of credits without having to do very much. And that's because the Kodesh Baruch Hu loved Klal Yisrael, he gave them that opportunity. The way that the Rivan reads it is, Loschot et Yisrael kadeshu mekablim schar b'mashmonim atzma min averot. They'll get schar from holding back from the averot. Therefore, shelo yatzarich letzavot kama mitzvot. Hashem didn't have to give us some of these mitzvot. V'kama atzarot ashkatzim nevelot she'en l'chadam she'enu katzben. Hashem didn't have to make those into commandments. People want to eat them even if he didn't make it a commandment. So what is the point of the commandment? Just to make it better for us, to give us more credit. Now, that makes an assumption which then is questioned by many of the Mefarshei HaMishnah over here, that the fact that you're given more mitzvot is a benefit, which is that you have all these opportunities to get mitzvot and rack up points. But everybody knows that when you get those opportunities, it comes with a responsibility, which means that just like you can rack up more points by keeping them, that means if you don't do that or you violate it, you're going to have lots of demerits that go against you. So how can you make a suggestion here that the increase in the mitzvot all of a sudden is good when there's a high likelihood or possibility that you will violate those mitzvot or aveirot? It's a double-edged sword by which you now get more opportunity, but that same opportunity comes with the possibility of failing or being unable to carry out the mitzvot. And the Maral suggests over here, that's why the Lashon over here is Lizakot et Yisrael and not Leitiv Yisrael, because it does require effort over here. It does require a person making the effort to take advantage of this fact, and it's not a foregone conclusion. And that is that Rabbi Hanani ben Akasha's din is two-sided or double-edged sword. If you want, it can be a zechut, and that's what he's saying, that the number of mitzvot gives you that opportunity to take advantage of these zechuyot. So here you have the Rambam's famous formulation of the Mishnah. The Rambam, the Perush HaMishnayot over here, says the following: Mikiarei emuna b'Torah kishiyakeim adam mitzvah mitargaga mitzvot kira'oi ukehogen. One of the fundamentals of the faith and of the Torah is that a person believes that if he does one of the 613 mitzvot kira'oi ukehogen properly and exactly the way they're supposed to, v'lo yishatefi ma kavanah mikavanot ha'olam, and he doesn't have any ulterior motives v'shum panim, el sheyaseh ota lishma mi'ahava, he does it for the purpose of love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for listening to Hashem. He does it with all the proper kavanot, and he does one mitzvah right. Kamo shebarati lecha, hinei zaka ba l'chaye olam haba. Through that, he is zoche to olam haba. V'alzeh amar Rabbi Hananya. That is what it means, Rabbi Hananya ben Akasha, ki ha-mitzvot biyotam harbei. The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us so many mitzvot, there's no way a person can't get one mitzvah right once in his lifetime. And through that action, he will bring himself to olam haba. So the Rambam says that you just got to get one right. And that's not easy. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it easier by giving you 613 mitzvot. So at least you have, over your lifetime, enough chances to get one thing and do one thing right properly, lishma, and then gained through that olam haba. And that's how he reads the pasuk over here, that Hashem chafetz the man tzidko. Since Hashem wanted the tzedkut, or the success of Bnei Yisrael, that they should reach olam haba and do one mitzvah properly, yagdil Torah v'yadir, he gave them tons of mitzvot and glory of the Torah, so they have so many chances and opportunities just to get it right. So that's the reading of the Rambam, which is very interesting, just in terms of his formulation, that we spend our whole lives trying to do mitzvot and trying to do the right thing, that to get it right is hard. And to get it right, we just want one time to get it right and do one mitzvah without any ulterior motives associated with that mitzvah and do it the proper way. So that would answer the question as to what the opportunity is because you're just trying to get one right. And that would explain why having more mitzvot is helpful. Or the possibility, like we said before, that we're dealing with mitzvot that people don't have temptations for. And so therefore, it's not as big a risk that the person has these opportunities. All right, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Chalukin Alav Chavirav al Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. The peers of Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel argue on his position. So, Amar Rab Adabrava Amre Beirav Taninan. We already have a Mishnah that is indicative of that fact, which is, Ein Bein Shabbat, the Yom HaKippurim, El Shezez Dono Bidei Adam, Vezez Dono Bihi Karet. This is a Mishnah in Megillah which compares many similar items. Over here it's comparing Shabbat to Yom Kippur. It says Shabbat and Yom Kippur are exactly the same except for their punishment, which is that Shabbat's punishment is Bidei Adam, you get Skila for the violation of Shabbat, whereas the punishment for the violation of Yom HaKippurim is Karet. And so that's the difference between them. V'im Ita, if you are right, Idi V'idi Bidei Adam, then both of them should be classified as Bidei Adam. Which means that, according to Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel, where you get malkot for any chiyuv karet, and that dismisses the chiyuv karet, then when it comes to Yom HaKippurim, it's no different than Shabbat. Shabbat gets skila, Yom HaKippurim gets malkot. So then why don't you say both of them would be Bidei Adam? What you see from that Mishnah in Megillah is that people don't agree with Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. Rabbi Nachman Omer, Hamani, who is the author over there? Rabbi Yitzchaki. Damar Malkot b'chayvei kretot leka. You can solve that problem by saying that the author of that position in Megillah is Rabbi Yitzchak, we bumped into earlier in the Masechta on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Bet, as well as in Sanhedrin, where he believes that there is no chayev malkot for chayvei kretot, and that is because by achuto it says you get karet to teach you exclusively karet and not malkot. So that would solve the problem that the Mishnah Megillah is bidei adam versus bidei shamayim, because Rabbi Yitzchak believes there is no other punishment besides karet. But that doesn't mean that everybody else, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, who argue on Rabbi Yitzchak, don't agree with Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel's position. Tanya, Rabbi Yitzchak omer chayvei kretot bichlal ayu. They were a part and parcel. I mean, achuto was part of the kretot of arayot. V'lama yatzat bikaret v'achuto. So then why did the karet v'achuto be separated out, delineated separately? Aduno bikaret v'lo b'malkot. To tell you that it karet, yes, malkot, no. Ravashi Amar Afilu Teimer Rabbonon. Even Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva can agree with that Mishnah in Megillah. Ze Ikars Dono Bidei Adam, Ze Ikars Dono Bidei Shamayim. That there, the primary punishment by Shabbat is Skila or Bidei Adam. By Yom HaKippurim, the primary punishment is Karet. And in that way, you can even make Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel the author of that Mishnah over there, because it's talking about the primacy of the punishment, not exactly what happened. The Rivan over here brings two explanations, the one of which he rejects, which is that a person is chayav karet, and then they have a choice. Either they get the karet, or they dismiss the problem by getting malkot. So malkot is a form of punishment that can relieve you of the karet. But that means that the karet is the primary punishment. Malkot is an afterthought where you can discharge the obligation. He says that's incorrect because the obligation or the punishment of karet and malkot devolve at the same moment. When the person violates whatever aveir it is, at that moment he's chayav karet, and at that moment he's also chayav malkot. So you can't say that the malkot happened after the karet. So he favors the other explanation, which is ikar bidei shamayim, means that the primary punishment is karet. And that means that in situations where you can't get malkot, for instance, where you don't have edim v'hatra'a, then the punishment that will remain is a punishment of karet. That's number one. Number two is, even though you have a chiyuv malkot over here, that is not the primary punishment, because karet is more chamur than malkot. It just happens to be that if you get malkot, it might release you from the karet, but that doesn't mean that that is the primary punishment. The primary punishment is karet. Malkot, the Kodesh Baruch Hu had rachamim, allows you to get out of the problem of karet through malkot. But if you can't get malkot, or it's a situation in which Beitin can't execute on the malkot, then the karet remains in place, and it doesn't disappear, the karet. And that means that that is the primary punishment. Even though that does open up the possibility by Shabbat as well, where the primary punishment is skilah, but you also have karet there, where the same thing, where if you don't have maiz hatra'ah, or a person doesn't, we don't have an ability to give them capital punishment, karet also sits there by Shabbat. So again, you're going to have to say the same thing, that the primary punishment associated with Shabbat is skilah, is a death penalty, and the primary punishment that's associated with Yom HaKippurim is karet. That gives you the gradation, the severity of the crime. How or what happens after that is just is secondary to the primary punishment that's associated with them. Whether you can get malkot there or karet by Shabbat, that's all secondary to the primary punishments. All right, Amarav Adarbava, Amarav, Halocha Kirab Hananya ben Gamliel. The halacha is like Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel, who basically says if you get malkot, no karet. Amarav Yosef, Man Solik Leila Va'ata Va'amar. Who went up to Kodesh Baruch Hu, who was up in heaven and came down and told us that that's the case? How do you ever know that Malkot dismissed the Karet? We don't know until you get up to Shemayim, and nobody's come back to tell us. And nobody's come back to tell us that. So Amalei Abaye, so a student Abaye says to him, El Hadam Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Shloshah Dvarim Asu Beitin Shalmata, Yiskimu Beitin Shalmala Yadam. There were three things that were innovated by the Hachachamim, or the Beitin Shalmata. And we see that the Beit Din Shamala gave them a stamp of approval. Again, you could ask the same question. Man Salik Le'ela Va'ata V'amar. Who went up to heavens to find out that they gave a stamp of approval? Ella Cry Kardarshinan. The way we know that there is approval is through the drusha of the Psukim. Achanami cry kardashinan. So to over here, we're dashing the psukim, and the psukim are telling us that the malkot dismissed the karet. And that is the limud, and we don't need to go up to heaven to figure it out if we have a limud like that. It's the equivalent of going up to heaven and getting that approval. Gufas, and now the Gemara goes back and wants to know, what is this statement of Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi? Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, shloshet dvarim, asu beitin shomato, v'eskimu beitin shomala yadam. What are the three innovations of the Chachamim, or the Beitin Shomata, that got approval, or a stamp of approval from the heaven? Ve'elohim, mikra megillah, v'she'elat shalom b'shem, v'avat maser. So we're going to go through each one of them now. Mikra megillah. And here the Ritva points out that each one of these were quasi-dangerous, in the fact that you might have thought that they are asur. There is a nidnud aveira associated with them. And that's why you would need approval from the heaven for the institution of the Chachamim. Mikra Megillah Dichtiv Timu V'Kiblu HaYehudim. Says that the Yehudim kept and accepted that which Mordechai and Esther had put in place. Kaimu L'Malo Mashikiblu L'Mato. Up in the heavens they stamped or gave approval to, they affirmed that which was accepted down below. That is, as opposed to the Drusha in Shabbat, which is Kimu V'Kiblu, which is Kimu Mashikiblu Kvar. That was the second acceptance of the Torah, but both drashot are in the same fashion, which is you see an additional acceptance to a prior acceptance. So in one case, it's Bnei Yisrael accepting the Torah that was given before. In the other case, it's the Beit and Shamala is accepting that which was accepted down below. So you see the stamp of approval, even though you would have thought that Mikra Megillah is a problem of Baal Tosif. You're adding a mitzvah to the Torah. So the reading of the Megillah might have seen being a problem of Baal Tosif. The answer is that we got approval from heaven to say that it's not in that category. It's a mitzvah d'rabbanan that is fine to establish. B'she'elat shalom b'shem, greeting people with the shem Hashem. Dichtiv, hine Boaz ba mibeit lachem. Boaz was coming from lachem, ayomer lakotzrim, and he says to the harvesters, Hashem imachem, God should be with you. Ve'omer, in addition to that, we have the pasuk that says, Hashem imcha gibor achayel. So the second proof is from Gideon, when the Malach comes to him and says that Hashem should be with you, the strong warrior. And the first one is in Boaz, in Megillat Ruth, where he greets the Kotzrim and he says Hashem Imachem, which is what the Sfardim actually say before they get an Aliyah. They use this back and forth, which is Hashem Imachem, and then they say Varechach Hashem, that Hashem should bless you. But you see the usage of Hashem Hashem in the greeting. And so we see the fact that in Megillat Ruth it gives such an approval shows you that you're allowed to do this. Again, over here, the Rivan brings two possibilities as what it means, She'elat Shalom B'Shem. One possibility is that you are permitted to do it. It's not an obligation, but you are permitted to use the Shem Hashem. And again, the risk would have been, or the problem might have been, that it was uses of Shem Shamayim Levatala, that you're not allowed to use God's name in vain, and this might be considered in vain. So this comes to teach you that it's not considered to be using Hashem's name in vain. Or the other possibility that he brings down, which is interesting, is that there's an obligation to greet an individual with the Shem Hashem. You must use the Shem Hashem when you greet an individual. She says, what about us today? How come we don't do that? Yes, we do. The word Shalom or Shalem is one of the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so when you say Shalom Aleichem, or you use the word Shalom or Shabbat Shalom, that Shalom is using the Shem Hashem and you're greeting with the Shem Hashem. So Gemara says, "May va'omer, why do you need two psukim to prove this? If you think Boaz did it of his own volition, because over there it's just he did it, it doesn't say there was an approval. And even though it's written in Megillat Rut, that doesn't mean there was a stamp of approval from heaven. Tashma. So then we bring a proof from Omer where a malach says Hashem imcha gibor achayel. So there we have in a shemayim, they're saying or greeting using the Shem Hashem. Havat maser dichtiv, the bringing of the maser. So here, there is a machloket in the Rishonim as to what the issue is. Rivan over here suggests that this is connected to the gzeirah of Ezra, that when they came back to Eretz Yisrael, the Levi'im didn't come, and therefore he confiscated their maser from them and granted it to the Kohanim. The Gemara discusses whether he fully took it away, or his kones them, that they lose it, but the Kohanim and them share it now. Different views within the Tanaim as to what exactly happened. That's what the Rivan claims possibly is what's going on over here. He then mentions also that they reinforced this in the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. So whether it refers to the Takana being reinforced or reestablished in the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. And in addition to that, he speaks about in the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, this the Bayit Tosafot say that that's what they think the Rivan meant, was that they added on additional masrot which is Minat Torah, the only obligation is Dagan Tirosh V'Itzhar, according to most Rishonim. Then they added on Peirot Ha'ilan and Yerek, which are Maaser Midrabanan. And that was added in the time of Chizkiyahu Melech, and that might be mentioned here, Havat Maaser, is the addition of these rabbinic Masrot that were given. Or the possibility is that it might be both, which is the fact that they were confiscating the Maaser from the Levim, and that they were taking Maaser from items that are not obligated Midoraita. And then the third possibility is the fact that they actually forced them to bring the Maaser to a central location rather than distributing it themselves. So now the Gemara brings Dichtiv, the Pasuk. Pasuk is from Malachi. Habiu et kol ha-maser el beit ha-utzar. Bring all the maser to the storehouses. V'iteref bebeiti. And then there will be plenty in my house. V'chanonui na-bazot amar Hashem Tzvakot. And then when I find favor in this, Hashem says, im lo aftach lachem arubot ha-shamayim, that I'll open up the windows of heaven, v'arkiot lachem brachad b'lidai, and give you an endless blessing. So you clearly see this pasuk is a pasuk of affirmation and approval. It is the pasuk that we read on Shabbat HaGadol, in the Haftorah of Shabbat HaGadol. And over here it's saying, either, depending on what you think the institution was, it says, Haviu et kol ha-maser, so the word kol means all masrot, including those masrot derabanan, or the other possibility is Haviu et kol maser beit ha-otzar. Bring all the maser to the central location. So that goes to the third explanation we gave, which is that they forced them to bring it to a central location, then distributed it, rather than having the individuals distribute it. Or, if we penalize Levi'im, they brought it up to the Beit HaOtzar, to the Beit Hashem, because that's where the Kohanim are found. So they're bringing it to the Kohanim and not to the Levi'im. In that way, this Pasuk affirms all three of those possibilities. My Ad B'lidai, what does it mean that you will get an endless bracha? Amarami Barav, Achi Blu Siftotechem Ilomar Dai. Until your lips are worn out from saying, it's enough, it's enough. And the bracha will be so endless that you will be tired of saying, it's enough, because there's so much. Amar Blazer, Begemo Mekomo Tofia Ruach HaKodesh. There are three instances in which the Ruach HaKodesh descended to give approval to an act of a Beitin or a decision of a Beitin. The Beitin Osho Shame, Bebeitino shel Shmuel Aramati, ubebeitino shel Shlomo. And here the Gemara explains it. Bebeitino shel Shem, in the Beitin of Shem dichtiv, vayakir Yehuda vayomer tzedkah mimeni. Yehuda realizes the instruments that she is holding, Tamar, are his. And he says, tzedkah mimeni, she is more righteous than I. Minayoda, how did he know that she was telling the truth and it was true that he had impregnated her? Dilma, ki eichi da azal ihu ligaba, azal nami ini shachrina ligaba. How does he know that just like he slept with her, there were other men that slept with her, and there's no guarantee that the baby here is his baby rather than someone else's baby? Yatzat batkol, so a heavenly voice came out and gave the affirmation, ramra mimeni yatsu kivushim. So the word mimeni is extraneous here. He could have just said sadka, she is right. What does it mean, tzadka mimeni? So that's what the Gemara is darshan. Mimeni doesn't mean Yehuda, but mimeni means HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying it came from me. Yatsu kivushim, either yatsu kivushim, this secret thing happened because of me. I wanted this to happen so that the kingly descendants would come from Tamar. And so I had to orchestrate it in this way. That's one. Yatsu kivushim means the hidden secrets, or this was going to happen. Or the Rivan brings the second explanation is yatsu kovshim. The conquerors will come out of this, which is David and Melech HaMashiach, who are the descendants of Tamar and Yehuda. And as the Rivan points out over here, this did not actually happen in the Beit Din of Shem, because Shem had passed away before the time of Yehuda. So when it says Beit Din of Shem, it doesn't mean Shem himself, but the Beit Din that is named after him, like Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, the students of Shem that had a Beit Din, that's what it's referring to. Beit Din Osho Shmuel Aramati, Dichtiv, Hinine Anu Bi Neged Hashem V'Neged Mishicho, et shor milakachti. So Shmuel at the end of his life, when he's going to retire, he says to the people, I've served you faithfully, and I want you to say here, did I take anything from anybody over here? I never made you pay anything. I never took anything wrongly from you. Vayimru lo ashaktanu. The people say, you did not take from us unjustly. Velo ritzotanu. And you did not force us to do anything. Vayomar alehem, eid Hashem bachem. And he says to them, I want you now to take basically a shvuah Hashem, that what you're saying is true, and that what I am saying is true, that nothing was taken wrongly. Vayomer Eid. It says, yes, we are witness to that. So the problem in the Pasuk is that until now, Bnei Yisrael were Vayomru. When the people respond to Shmuel, they respond in the plural. Here in the last statement, you have Vayomer. And he said Eid. What is it he's saying over here? It should be they said Eid. So that's what Gemara says. Vayomer, Vayomru mi Bayalei. It should have been the plural. Yatzabako, Rama, Ani, Eid, Badavar, Zeh. So that's what it means. The Bat Kol came out. The Vayomer means that in a singular form, the Malach or Hashem or the Bat Kol was saying, we are testifying or affirming to the fact that Shmuel took nothing. V'beitino shel Shlomo, Dikhtei v'yana melech v'yomer, Tznu la tayeled, Dachai v'ameit lo timitu. Give her the live baby, and do not kill it. He imo, because she is the mother of the child. Minayoda, has he know that this woman was really the mother of the child? This is the famous case of Shlomo Melech, where he has the two zonot that come, and each one of them has a baby. One of them has passed away, one of them is still alive, and they're fighting over which belongs to whom in that case. Shlomo Melech, in his wisdom, says that we're going to cut the live baby in half. One of the women says, fine. The other woman says, no way. And he says, the one woman that said, no way, is definitely the mother of the baby. How does he know that that's the case? Dilma irume mir arma. She could be playing games. She could know that that would be a good way to act in order to be considered the mother of the baby. So maybe she was playing a game. Yatsa boko bamra hi imo. That's what it means at the end of the pasuk. Hi imo, she is the mother. That's not Shlomo Melech, but rather the Bat Kol affirming that that is the mother. Amar Rava mimai. How do you know that all of these cases, the psukim, are indicating that there was a Bat Kol? Dilma Yehuda, kivein dechoshiv yarchev yome v'itzrame. How do you know that Yehuda didn't just calculate the time that he had been with Tamar and figures out the days and the months, and he sees that it's 9 months later? Dechazinan mechazkinan. Delo chazinan lo mechazkinan. Because that which we see, we use a chazaka. That which we don't see, we don't have a chazaka. So over here, she claims it came from him, and he calculates the time period, and it's 9 months, so the evidence is in favor of saying that it's him. We don't know that she slept with anyone else, and since we don't know, we're not going to assume that there's anybody else who's the father of this child. Maybe that's why Yehuda was certain that it had come from him. Shmuel nami kulu Yisrael kari lehu b'lashon yechideh. We have many times through Tanakh that Bnei Yisrael referred to in the singular form. Dichtiv Yisrael nosha b'Hashem. That Bnei Yisrael are saved or gained salvation through Hashem. And over there it says Nosha in the singular, even though it's speaking about Bnei Yisrael. The truth is that over here it's a little harder because just earlier in the Pasuk it says Vayomru. So you have a contrast there where one time it says Vayomru and the other case it says Vayomer. It's still harder to say, but we do have instances like that as well where it flips between the plurality and the singularity when it's speaking about Bnei Yisrael. Shlomo nami midaha kamirachmata. He sees that the difference in the reaction of the women, that's what makes him certain. One of the women was upset over the cutting the baby, but equally so, the other woman was not upset. And that might be the giveaway over here as to whom the baby belongs to. Ella Gemara. Gemara ends off that this is a misora that we have, that the three Bate Dinimi over here had a Bat Kol come and affirm the psak or the situation in each of these cases. And not that you can learn it from the psukim because the people could have come to these conclusions on their own. But we have a misora that in each of these instances it was affirmed by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. There was a Bat Kol that appeared in the Beitin of these individuals. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Chav Gimel Amud Bet.